Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Oregon Tradeswoman presentation, My Walk Has Never Been Average, on Friday, September 26th at 7 p.m. My Walk Has Never Been Average is a multimedia presentation based on the lives of women whose stories are rarely told. Adapted for the stage from interviews with Black women in all aspects of construction, these stories reveal great inner strength and accomplishment. That's My Walk Has Never Been Average on Friday, September 26th. 7 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland, Oregon. For more information, that can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune into KBOO on Wednesday, October 1st for Turning the Tide on Climate Change.
An all-day special about climate change and the actions we must take now.
And don't miss special guest Naomi Klein talking about her new book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate at 1 p.m.
That's Turning the Tide on Climate Change on Wednesday, October 1st, 8 a.m., 4 p.m. on
KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Volunteers of America, Oregon, committed to helping our community's most vulnerable people for over 100 years and to giving them a hand up rather than a hand out. More information is available on the web at voaor.org.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told, so now you see the light. Hey.
It's 8:03 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm your host, Lisa Loving. And Joanne's going to be back next week, so don't you all worry. She's coming back, and I think she had a wonderful time. Anyway, today, the epic Portland Comprehensive Plan. Public hearings are happening right now in this big picture development plan set to shape the next 30 years of development or more in the metro area. And why does it matter? And why should you get involved, listeners? We're live in the studio with a handful of everyday people. I'm putting it that way. We had a discussion about whether they're neighborhood members or neighborhood activists. Everyday people, my favorite kind of activists. James Peterson, Carol McCarthy, and Bill Kielhorn. They have jumped into the crusade to get people involved in this process. It's a bit thorny. Let's go to Bill first. Bill, tell us what's on the line, because you're the person who drew all this entire radio station's attention to this issue. You called a couple times and were like, hey, people need to be paying attention to this. Why? What's going on with it?
Well, I am that person, but I'm not the expert. My task was to get some attention at KBOO, and then I did that, and then I ended up in this seat. The real experts are James and Carol. But we are very concerned about what's happening. We all feel worried about the demolitions that are going on. There is quite a lot of activity, people opposing the house demolitions, and commissioners usually end up saying that they're bound to implement the existing plan, and we're anxious to change that plan and get some control over it, and the update process is happening right now. But we feel that there's kind of a rush to get through all of the approval process, and we feel that the draft replacement plan, the new plan, is flawed severely, and that Portlanders need to take the time necessary to read it very carefully and get their comments in. In particular, well, we'll say more about what we would our main objective with this.
Okay, and later. Carol McCarthy, I understand she's the data person.
Yes, in fact, I've put in all the policies. There's 539 of them into a database, so we can search it for keywords and find out, how the various issues are being addressed in the policies of the plan.
So, and which ones are not being addressed.
Right. Okay, and so let's quickly go to James. James, how did you get involved? What do you think are the hot things that people need to know about?
I think the most important thing is that they're adopting this plan without defining the institutional and the mixed-use zones where 80 to 90% of the growth that's going to occur. They're going to adopt these definitions for these zones sometime this summer. But this plan is the final public comment going to the Planning Commission will be November 4th.
It's actually kind of shocking, really. So what the message I'm getting from you all is that the citizens now comment on this draft plan. The comments go to the City Planning and Sustainability Board.
Commission.
And then that commission thinks and probably argues, maybe throws a few punches behind closed doors, and then they make a recommendation to the city council. Is that the process?
Right.
And so you had already mentioned there's we're looking at a deadline. Can you talk a little bit about the dates? Because that's part of the point you're saying, is that the city wants this plan to be approved before they've actually approved the definition of these different mixed-use areas. So in other words, literally the process is putting the cart before the horse, and it defeats the purpose of people having an opinion if you can't even define the terms. And it really is all about the terms when we're looking at these development definitions. So first of all, what is the timeline? There's dates involved. So Bill's going to go through that. This is important, people.
I have the dates right now. There were four public hearings that were scheduled. One happened 2 days ago, so that one's in the past. But the next one is October 14th. The one after that's October 28th. And then the final one is November 4th. And we expect these definitions you're talking about to come out sometime next spring, long after November 4th in the last hearing.
Listeners, the phone lines are open. We are talking about, this is, again, when something bad happens, like if Trader Joe's gets turned, gets its nose out of joint, decides not to build at a certain place, everybody's up in arms. But really, the real issues are baked into these sorts of policy processes. If you cared about whatever happened with that, if you care about some of these other development issues, it's this, I hate to say it, and we also disagreed about this, this is a kind of a boring process. It's a bureaucratic process. But if you don't plug into this, then it's hard for you to complain about whatever happens 10 years from now at the corner of Albert and 82nd, and something will happen over there. I'm predicting it. It's sort of a dead zone. Anyway, so listeners, though, what's the most important thing that you want to see happen, put into Portland's, I always want to call it the wrong thing, but it is it's the comprehensive plan. What do you want to make sure is in any comprehensive plan that governs development in your neighborhood or your area for the next more than a generation, listeners? What's the most important thing to you? And are you going to go and give your opinions to the city? That's what we're talking about right now. So 503-231-8187. And we get a few phone calls. We get a few people putting some things on the table. I'd love to go back and hear a little bit more about the real concerns that our people have in the room today. Because I think part of it is, and I know that what Bill was saying to me a few days ago was the concern that corporate interests are going to be in a position to trump some of the everyday people interests when it comes to these zoning things. We do have a caller. Let's grab the caller. We have Jake on the phone. Jake, what do you think about it, the development plan?
Well, that's kind of one of my questions was, I'm familiar with the past, but with these new things going on, it hasn't been really clear what the new changes are and what the negative impacts are. I'd love to learn more about how I can be an activist for change. But
well, one of the most important...
Awesome. Thanks for calling. Thanks. Go for it, Bill. Jump in there.
One of the most important changes is the removal of any mention of the neighborhood associations throughout the city. I forget how many, it's around 90 or 100 neighborhood associations that are in the city. And they were explicitly mentioned in the earlier plan, and they've been explicitly removed for mysterious reasons in this plan. And even though Carol knows probably the exact statute for what Oregon state law requires in the plan, and one of the major parts of that is that citizen involvement be foremost. Yet in this plan proposed, neighborhood associations are removed. That's one of the main ways that Portlanders can comment to the city, and we feel that, that's a change that we don't approve of.
So in other words, just to be crystal clear about that, theoretically right now, the neighborhood associations actually sort of kind of have certain legal rights or certain baked-in representation aspects?
Few.
A few, a very few. Yeah, and very so few. Your concern is that that's potentially being removed completely,
if I understand right. Every time there's a land division, the neighborhood associations get a notice, and they have the ability to get fee waivers to the hearings officer, and they have major impact in the appeal process. And if they're part of the appeal process, you would think that they should be in the governing document.
Wow. So you're actually, the word inconsistencies is coming up, and mm-hmm. you're worried about how this is going to play out in the future when someone's really has it, like maybe some beautiful house is getting torn down by, I'm not going to name the company that seems to be tearing them all down, and people are literally massing outside that house and trying to figure out. So your concern is, how is this going to play out in front of perhaps the law, the Land Use Board of Appeals or some mm-hmm. very specific thing? And Carol, you had wanted to say a few things. Carol is set up in here. You are a brain trust. She's got her computer. She's got her mouse with an awesome mouse pad. Carol, so when we just talked about the inconsistencies, and Bill's talking about the removal of even mention of neighborhood associations in this plan, now you have a lot more information about what's changed, which is what Jake was asking. So I'm just going to give you the talking stick.
Okay, well, I should say to start out with it that the city is planning to accommodate 120,000 additional households in the next 20 years.
That's half again the number that we already have.
Right. And so that means that for every two people that are here now, there'll be three here in 20 years. So the state requires that the city prepare the comprehensive plan. And the first thing the state wants to see in the comprehensive plan is citizen involvement. That's their number one goal. So in the earlier comprehensive plan and in the city code and charters, there's a role for neighborhood associations. But in the current policies, the word citizen is not mentioned once. Neighborhood associations is mentioned once, standalone, but then twice in conjunction with the business association. So the role of the neighborhood association is greatly diminished, and I think needs to be beefed up.
And what I hear you saying too, you said the business association, and I think that goes back to Bill's concern is making sure that citizens have at least as much, maybe more, input into whatever happens with these development decisions than specifically the business association does, or
right.
the chambers of commerce.
And the state requires as well that the goals and roles of the various participants be clearly defined, and that feedback, the mechanism and the role of feedback, how it's used, be clearly stated. So all those things need to be emphasized in the plan.
All right. And we do have another caller, people. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We're talking about the comprehensive plan, the comprehensive plan public hearings, your chance to go literally put on the table what you want the city to know or do or bake into its policy on development for the next, I think it's 30 years, right?
20.
Right on. And so we do have a caller. And is it Joanne?
Yes.
Hey, Joanne.
Listen, I feel sorry for Amanda Fritz's loss, and I feel bad about the ongoing wars. And pretty soon, I won't be around to annoy anybody. But somebody said something about getting somebody's nose out of joint. I guess it was Trader Joe's. You know what I would like before I die? So when my nose goes out of joint, which has been an awful lot during my life, that I'll have equality with corporations about it. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Joanne, always putting the hot pots on the table. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. We have Sid on the phone. Sid, what are you thinking about today?
Hi. I'm thinking about equity. And, you know, the city was thinking a lot about equity, too. They said that that's their number one, the not first measure of success is equity and inclusion. And, you know, I feel like and there's economic prosperity and affordability are paired dimensions of equity within the Portland plan. But it seems like inclusion isn't even possible with not having affordable housing. And I live in the Richmond neighborhood, really close to Southeast Division, where all that development has been going in. And I looked into the rent rates of the buildings that have been going up nearby where I live. And it's bad. I mean, a studio at the UDP is $1,300. A one-bedroom is $1,500. At Zillow, it's $1,400 for a one-bedroom. At the Division Street Lofts, it's $1,250 for a studio and $1,800 for a one-bedroom. And two bedrooms are upwards of $2,500.
You could buy a house for that. You would be buying a house.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Sid, fingers on the pulse, man. This is the part that gets me the most, is that our awesome panel of agitators, can I call you guys agitators?
People, no.
He's not agitated. No, but our wonderful panel
of people.
They're literally trying to get people to come out and talk about exactly what you're talking about, Sid. And can you guys, Carol, I'm not sure. So Jake is calling because he's saying, look, this is a big pile of paper. And how do I read through that to understand what these 537 policies are? And then, you know, what's changed? And then Sid is like, look, I just want people to be able to live. Kind of what I hear Sid saying, you know, $2,500. That's a house payment. That's two house payments. Anyway, so Kathy.
But they're not even building places where families are going to live. Yeah. You know, families live in this neighborhood, but they're building one bedroom and studios, and with maybe one or two bedrooms,
or yeah. 200 square foot apartments.
Yeah.
What's that?
Or mini apartments or whatever, yeah,
right.
SRO. Or these gigantic, what I have going up in my neighborhood, which is the Beaumont. I'm like right at the edge of Cully and Beaumont, Wilshire. We have, I just call them starter castles. It's like, so there's this much dirt, and I'm not going to name the company that has built every one of these things on my street, but they just build these big starter castles all the way out to the edge of the plot of land, and then two retired people move in. And they're like five-bedroom houses. They're gigantic, you know, and I never see grandkids. I love families, but... And I'm not saying that people who are retiring from California after selling that flat-top house in Mendocino and making $1 million, I don't even mean to be rude about that, but it just... When you talk about land use, it's kind of frustrating when you're trying to figure out how can we have so many families with no place to live and individual or affluent couples that have great big spaces. Sid, I want to hear from Carol. What, she's got the information. She's trying to get me to be quiet so she can give the information.
No, actually, I'm so happy, Sid, that you called in. And I think there are people like you who know more than we do. And we need to get everyone who knows something about this to examine the parts of the policies and make recommendations to the commission for changes or additions and modifications. Because there are a lot of experts out there who... could address things like setbacks or what they call the FAR, that's the floor area ratio, that may control the bulk and the overtowering nature of some of these new monster houses.
Sid, are you part of this process? Are you plugged in? Are you agitating for social change over there?
Well, I am. I mean, my focus in Portland is on local decision making. So, you know, that's with part of City Repair and Community Rights Portland, and I'm also part of the Neighborhood Association, and I'm also on the steering committee of the Division Design Committee. And the Division Design Committee was put together in response to this kind of development and feeling like we don't have a say when developers come in and they say, okay, we're going to develop something. Usually by the time they come to the Neighborhood Association, unless they're requesting adjustments to the code, what the code requires. Unless that's the case, they're just informing us, and we can rabble all we want, but it's not likely that it's going to make a difference. Now, there have been developers that really elicit feedback and respond to that feedback, and that feels really great when that happens, but there's very little that neighborhood associations can do. And so what we've been doing in the Division Design Initiative is coming up with design guidelines, figuring out what we think is really important here in the neighborhood, what is the character of our neighborhood, and then working to put those in an easy-to-follow document so that developers who are coming in can say, okay, I want renters. How can I attract them? Oh, there's this set of guidelines that lets me know exactly what the neighbors want. And then the next step for us is going to be to figure out how can we incentivize developers to actually use them or implement them. And I presented a plan or a scenario in front of the commission, and it's just an example, but the idea is to, if citizens get together and say, okay, this is what we want the character of the neighborhood, we want affordability, whatever those measures are, and then the city is able to leverage their power when developers are coming for permits and say, okay, well, by right you can do X, Y, and Z, and that's the state of the law right now. They can by right build and do X, Y, Z according to code, but the city could offer incentives, like you had mentioned, floor area ratio, which is just kind of how much the building can mass in a certain square footage, or building height. The city could say, okay, well, you could have 45 feet if you include these measures that the neighborhood wants. And so I was focusing on equity when I was presenting to the commission. So I presented a plan like this. Let's say that an apartment building that was originally going to be 36 units the developer was willing to meet certain aspects of equity. And so the city gives them extra floor area ratio and a little bit extra height. And with that extra space, they were able to build 40 units.
So that's part of the other question here. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. We're talking about the Epic Portland Comprehensive Plan. I keep saying that. It's big. It's a big deal. And we've got Sid on the phone. He's got like dispatches from the front, talking about how do everyday people have any kind of impact over what buildings sprout up in our streets. And I know that a lot of listeners care a lot, but when I start hearing about floor ratio, I just go, oh my God, I have no idea what that is. And I'm not even sure if I can calculate a square foot. No, don't calculate it for me now. But I'm just saying, it's intimidating as a citizen to get involved. And part of it too is we all assume that they won't listen to us, whoever they are. And so that's why I just totally appreciate, Sid, what you're talking. You're literally talking about people sitting down and talking in a reasonable manner about what they want. And I love to hear that.
Right. And there's also the public can comment on the map app. If you go onto the city's website, you can look up your property and put a comment in, or look up your neighborhood and put a comment in, and that becomes part of the public record if you include your name and your address. So the commission has to review all of those and consider them when they finalize the version that they're going to submit to city council. So you can also put in public comments. Our neighborhood, and actually the Coalition of Southwest Neighborhoods, submitted a request that the hearings be extended 90 days beyond when the mixed-use zones and campus institutional zones are defined. So
that people can know what they're deciding about, what the terms even mean. And listeners, I just have to also say that the Office of Planning and Sustainability, they literally are begging people. I know we had this discussion before this show, but they're begging people to care about this. They're begging people to get involved, even though they may not like what you have to say to them. We discussed that too. The members on the board of the Planning and Sustainability Board. Actually, it's kind of an interesting group of people. So there's more than one moving part there, but they do have on their website, City of Portland, portlandoregon.gov, the Planning and Sustainability Bureau has a whole page about the comprehensive plan, and they're trying to spin it so that, you know, from the comfort of your couch, the comprehensive plan, open house is at your fingertips, and you can look at the hearings and stuff, and they've got these sort of splashy things that they've made. But long and the short of it, none of it means anything unless you plug in and get involved and pay attention. And we have a couple callers. We have Rose on the phone. Rose, what's going on with you today?
Hey, I am so glad you're talking about this. I love Portland. I love it like it is. And I'm sorry I'm not reasonable about it at all. I want it to stay just like it is.
Me too.
I hate everything about these, driving up and down the streets and seeing these horrible complexes of many apartments that are in these massive buildings. And I'm a tree person, and I think this great planning is not leading to anything wonderful. I would like to know more about the plan, and where is there a written explanation of it somewhere so that a person
can... Good question.
Kind of look things over. It's very hard to grasp everything orally, you know, within just a few minutes.
It really is. And even if you look at it and you hold it in front of you, it's kind of hard to grasp the whole thing. But I'm going to kick that back to Carol. Carol, tell her how she can access more information about what's in the plan.
Okay, well, if you want to get...
Is there any guide to, I mean, like even Carol's input in terms of her interpretation of it, what...
Email. Right. So if you wanted to get a printed copy of the plan, there's actually two volumes, and you can go down to 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland and pick up a free copy. It's about 2 inches total if you picked it up, but it's, if you're oriented that way, it's useful. Otherwise, you can go online and you can download the plan.
It's pretty easy. Let me just give the website. It's www.portlandoregon.gov/BPS/comp plan, and it's available there. You can read it and download it.
And what I actually hear Rose say isn't there a Cliff Notes on this monster?
it comes with an introduction that's easier to read, and it's not really that hard to read. It's not as technical as you might think, Lisa.
The other piece, Rose, is that if you do have the resources to go online, they actually do have little, I'm just going to say they're like little splash pages, like poster size graphics where you can read where some of these positions, basically. And they also have a whole bunch of videos. The city wants people to participate in this, and it is a sacrifice, like what Sid's talking about, what you all are talking about. It is a sacrifice, and yet it actually does have an impact for at least more than a generation, because this is a plan for the next 20 years, but whatever we do now is going to affect people for 40 years. I mean, realistically.
And I would encourage people to get in touch with their neighborhood associations, especially most of them have land use chairs they can contact and find out what their neighborhood land use committees think are the most important issues for their neighborhoods. You can also go online and read the comments that everyone else has submitted, and you can look at the map app again and look at comments that people have posted there.
I just want to put out a suggestion, though, to you people. I just want to say, I think a really good place to start is if you just stop and think about what do you want to see, and then go from there. That's my suggestion, because the other issues that I have is that Sid was talking about the construction, the development. I'm really interested in, and he said equity. I'm interested in equity in contracting. I want to know, when I go down the street in Portland and I see a road crew, it's all white people. And now when I drive down the street or walk down the street where my mother lives and I see a road crew, it's all people of color. And I want to see that if we're going to be throwing up these developments, that they're going to create jobs for people that need them the most. And I think that this is a place to put that in there. Also, I'm concerned about this issue about the street fee, right? The street fee and this movement that the Mayor Hales has, that he wants to, him and Commissioner Novick, they want to pave everything and they want all the sidewalks. I'm saying, I just want to suggest that I want safe sidewalks, I want safe streets, but I don't want to see this whole city paved over. That's going to be a problem for a whole lot of reasons, frankly.
What happened to permeability? That was a big word, permeable surfaces for Portland, and I don't hear it anymore.
You know,
I wish it was in the comp plan.
Anyway, so in other words, listeners, stop for a second and think about what your priorities are. Start there, and then look for that in the big pile of documents. What do you think about that, Rose? Is that helpful at all?
I have my priorities. No growth.
Right. All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling, Rose.
I would like to have more. I would love to have some assistance in ferreting out the information and making some sense of it.
Okay.
And I don't know that that's easy to do at a meeting, and I would hope that some of the people that are with you today would take up this cause of explaining, you know, what anything actually means.
And they is what they're doing, and that's what they're doing here, and they're actually offering their phone number. Do you want to give, is there a contact info? You know what, Rose?
You know, the best place, Rose, if you want to contact a person, you could write to this email address. This is the Multnomah Neighborhood Association Land Use Chair, who is Jim Peterson, quietly
right
sitting next to us. But let me give you the email address. It's MNA, that's from Multnomah Land Use Association, MNA Land Use Committee, all one word, MNA Land Use Committee at gmail.com. If you send a letter there, maybe we can help you. I think it would be great, you know, if you like reading it on your own quietly, you can get your own physical pop. A copy, or you can get it online if that's more convenient. There's also, I think, would be great in neighborhood associations if they would spend some time or form a committee of interested people who could work their way through it. Because one of the issues with it is it's very poorly written. Whatever it's saying, even if you agree with what they're saying, say on bicycles or something, there's a little mention of bicycles, not enough. But it's garbled language. It's just garbled. It's very poorly written from any standpoint of good writing. So it's confusing, and you know, if people could work through that, I got the feeling at the last hearing that they would be open to edits like that. If you send in edits that could clarify the language, it's not legalese, it's not that, it's just very poorly written.
Were you going to say something, James?
We're trying to help people protect what they value, and that seems to be what's missing in this plan. And somehow we're trying to protect the character of the neighborhood.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just can't emphasize how important that is. Portland is a treasure. I've lived away a long time. I don't even live right in Portland now. But I love Portland. I love driving through Northeast Portland and North Portland and the tree-lined streets and the variety of homes and the different sizes of homes. And to me, it's an era that the whole thing should be historic.
All right. Thanks for calling, Rose. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Today we're talking about the Portland Comprehensive Plan. Public hearings are happening right now on this big picture development plan set to shape the next 20 years. I'm pulling off the lid off that. Shape the next many years of development in the metro area. Why does it matter, and why should you get involved? We're live in the studio with James Peterson, Carol McCarthy, and Bill Keelhorn. They're neighborhood activists, neighborhood members, everyday people like me and you, who have jumped into this crusade to get people involved in this process. Carol has created, from what I understand, like literally a database of information, searchable by keyword, which is exactly what you need if you're going to start wading through this. I'm going to call it an ocean of text. From the sense that I get, people who are listening right now, people who are activists in certain areas, whether it's bicycles, racial equity, poverty, housing, you should be looking at this transportation. You should be breaking off the piece that matters to you and drilling into it. And that's what really, that's what we all need to have happen. And it's difficult to bring people into this process. It's extremely bureaucratic, and there are definitely obstacles. So it is a struggle, but this is literally laying out the train tracks for years to come. Bill, what are you going
to
say?
I just wanted to say that one aspect, as I said, is going through and trying to correct the language that's in the existing document. But an even harder part of it is noticing which things have been omitted.
Like
the negative space, as we call it, the shadows.
Right, that's harder. And now is a time when citizens and neighborhood associations can identify the things that they want to include in the plan. And, you know, that's a lot harder thing to come up with. But, you know, the process is still open. And you can get those things in there. Some of the things we heard at the last meeting were internet equitability, you know, so across the city, you get equal access to internet. That would be great. Noise is another one. There were a number of things coming up, and plenty of things that we haven't thought of. So that's a hard part of it, but there's still time to get that stuff in there. So just want to make
And all of it with the really intense pressure of what is expected to be the population growth in this area. And one of the reasons, you know, we always joke people want to move to Portland because they read about it in the New York Times and it sounds so cool. And by the time they get there, the fact that they all moved here, it's not like that anymore. You know what I'm saying? But the thing that is important about processes like this is that, I mean, to the degree that anyone's even asking you to get involved, that's kind of the rare thing. 5 years from now, no one's going to take your input on this at all. They're not going to care what you think. I'm putting that out. The time is now. And we do have a bunch of callers, 503-231-8187. And I think we have Michael on the phone. Michael, what's going on?
Okay, first of all, you know, I could care less about trees. My concern is that what's going on in Northeast Portland, I don't care how you slice it, you're talking about gentrification.
Yeah.
You're talking about relocating people that's been there over out to suburbia. The neighborhood, these neighborhood organizations, they have, most of them are front for companies like Habitat for Humanity.
They seem like that, anyway.
Who is one of the biggest perpetrators of gentrification that I know, that came over under the guise of building affordable homes for the people that were already there, but in fact was involved in financing and a whole bunch of other stuff that gentrified Northeast Portland. You know, the city is involved. Bureaucrats started it. The police department. You can't leave them out of this equation. Whatever goes on in inner cities, the police department is right in there with it to make it all happen. So that's my take on it. Part of it, whatever you guys are talking about, you're concerned about the congestion, but really what you ain't talking about is gentrification, which is the bottom line of all everything you're talking about.
Right. And that's why we needed you to call, Michael, and you sort of rung off before I had a chance to ask you if you were going to actually take your opinions to the city, because really, you should tell the city what you think. We were talking about this before the show started. I think the police bureau should be part of the comprehensive plan, too. I think
definitely.
Should be something in there about that.
That's one that's overlooked so far.
And actually, you know, when you hear Sid and Rose and people talking about the cost and what the heck is happening on Division Street, that is gentrification, and gentrification is the elephant in the room that more people need to be talking about as far as this plan. Michael, I do have to push back on you about the trees thing, and you're like, I don't care about trees. Okay, gentrification, right? Everybody being pushed to Cully, everybody who's poor, everybody who's a person of color getting pushed out to East County. There's this thing called global warming, and if you're a Republican, you might not believe in it, but it's already happening, man. And if you don't have enough trees out there where everything is paved, and I already talked about that, people are going to die, because there's this thing called the urban heat island effect. It happened in, what was it, Chicago in the 90s? So many people died there because of a heat wave, and they were almost all African American, and they didn't, you know, I have to push back on you, Michael, about the tree thing. You're thinking it doesn't matter, but where people are displaced, where they're displaced to East County, where there's fewer resources and everything's paved, there's not very many trees, those apartment buildings, that should definitely be part of this plan as well. Looking at how people are affected by, what does it mean if everything's made out of concrete? It really does. People die from that. But Michael, I love it when you call, even though sometimes I push back and disagree. What were you going to say, Carol?
Well, I just searched to see, and there are 25 policies that include the word gentrification. So there is a place that people could start at least to review those policies and change the wording in there if they don't agree with what's in there. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. The other thing I think that's missing from the plan are metrics, so that you can say, yeah, the temperature of Portland should not go up, the ambient air should not go up by a certain amount, and then you can monitor it and come back and adjust things if you're not meeting those goals. So.
You know, and it's another thing that you just said. We had Teresa Rayford was calling in and commenting on these airwaves about something totally different a few weeks ago, and she mentioned that there should be, somebody should be making an effort right now to figure out how many African-American owned houses there still are in North and Northeast Portland, and literally putting together a plan to help people stay in those houses just as a specific effort. And that could be part of this too, to be honest with you.
That's right.
And it doesn't even necessarily have to be African-American families. You know, I'm just going to say elderly people too. When I first moved to Portland back in the 1980s, I moved to Northwest Portland, and it was very much an old people's neighborhood. All the bars were elderly bars. And when that place started gentrifying, the elderly people started killing themselves because they could not, they couldn't face moving. And you're talking about people that were 70, 80 years old that lived in these apartment buildings. So it doesn't necessarily even, when you're talking about displacement, it's not even necessarily just African-American families. It can be, it's all kinds of people that are underserved and they're hanging by spit. And what is that about? And this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're talking about the Portland Comprehensive Plan. I know. And it really is a vital and important thing. And we really need people to get involved in it. And at the end of the show, we're going to give the phone number where you can call City Hall and tell people what you think. They actually have got phone numbers. We've got email addresses for people that are digitized or not. And the number to call with your opinion, what do you think should be included in a comprehensive plan, controlling Portland development for the next period of time. What do you think? Let us know what you think. 503-231-8187. And we've got Christopher on the phone. Christopher, what do you think? Hey, Christopher, what's going on?
Thank you for all the great work and all the great discussion you guys are doing. Especially now, it seems to be that the city, Portland, and a lot of cities are at the crossroads with investor money and foreign money coming in and driving up the prices and pushing people out of not only neighborhoods in the Northeast and Northwest area, but you're talking about all over the city. And as somewhat part of the problem, being a new sprout up here from Sacramento and seeing the same thing there, you're going to have to come to an understanding that as climate changes, Portland is going to become one of those refugee cities where people are going to want to
flock
to. And then we're going to have to, just like Sacramento, you're going to have to deal with the urban sprawl and keeping the city and keeping the small neighborhoods more character to them and keeping Portland weird instead of seeing some of the Northwest area where you got subdivisions and uniformity and kind of going back to a kind of corporate headquarters model. And I just wanted to hear what your guys' discussion was towards accommodating, you know, another 100,000 people in the city in a rational manner and still respecting people's, space and, characters to the city. And I'll take my answer off the air and keep up the great work.
Well,
I would like to say about the number, 120,000 new households, not people, 120,000 new households. In my view, it is a goal of the city. I mean, that number, we want to find out if we could lower that number or change that number. Our own, we don't know where the number came from.
Where does the number come from?
Yeah, we don't know. I think it might have come from the Oracle at Delphi, but it's something like that anyway.
Or a calculator, somebody actually, you see some of these policy things come down literally from different, like, calculations that people make. I mean, people are paid to sit in an office and figure this out, and they have certain metrics mm-hmm. that maybe they learned in college, and where that comes in, you know.
I really think it's goals of people who want to profit by building these houses, and they work together with people to come up with that number, and they think they can shove that down our throat. That's where I think it comes from. There are models involved, but it's a complicated thing about how models work, which models are being used, who is monitoring or certifying the models. And I really don't think the models work anyway. I think you cook the inputs till you get what you think the citizens will accept.
But I think all the above is true. And I think that is how some of the people, the bureaus, the bureaucrats in City Hall feel obligated to sit there and calculate in what they consider to be the role of the corporate partners or what have you, or what they consider to be, you know, the business climate and something like that. And we may... You know, it goes back to what Joanne said. She wants citizens to have equal power with corporations, right? And right. I think that is a goal. So I actually think all the above is true, Bill. I think that people
I think our city councils are very interested in the people who fund their campaigns, so they are paying very close attention to them.
Well, this is an important time to be watching that.
And there's only, James, of this growth that's coming, there's only 10% of this growth will happen on vacant land. 80 or 90% of the growth will be redeveloped. properties.
Yeah.
So how is that going to affect the character of the city?
Right.
In McCall's original vision, who created land use planning,
Tom McCall,
yeah, vision was visit but don't stay.
Right.
Do we really want all this growth? Mm. What is it producing? Is it a better quality of life?
And so going back to what Michael said a few minutes ago, I want to point to Seattle. Where is it? I'm pointing to it right now. Point to Seattle. Right now in the city of Seattle, the people are looking at these issues around the gentrification. How many people have been pushed out from the central area, for example, all to all the suburbs, Kent, Bellevue, all these different places. And then suddenly their metro bus system decides that, nope, right now we have to stop operating in the red. And they slashed, significantly their bus services. And that's still being argued. It's going to be rolling out through next year because suddenly they decided that they can't operate in the red anymore. And, actually public transit all over the United States operates in the red every day. TriMet operates in the red from what I understand. But the long and the short of it is that, Michael, now that people have been displaced to the suburbs, the bus service is cut, so those people cannot even get back into the city to those better paid jobs or to the coffee shop jobs that they had unless they have a car. And people, the weird thing is, Michael, people are pointing at Portland from Seattle and say, Portland's a model of transportation. And we're going, street fee, what? It's hilarious. So I'm not sure who's got the magic wand on that. But the transportation is a big part of this, too, where people are displaced and how they're able to get to the jobs that they need. And we have a bunch more callers. We have Laura on the phone. Laura, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Lisa. I am calling from St. John's. I'm a neighborhood activist who works with the Portland Harbor Citizens Advisory Group on the Superfund cleanup, the lower 11 miles, as most of us know. The Willamette River is a Superfund cleanup. And it's a very fraught and difficult process because, as you can guess, responsible parties don't really want to pay as much as they need to pay to clean it up. It's a very political and profit-driven process. And an important one. We should all somehow be involved in that if possible. But what I wanted to say is that in the grand plan, I heard that 600 acres approximately was going to be added to of industrial development. It's going to be added to the city. And I think some of this happens at the harbor, and I don't know where else it happens. But I'm really concerned about that. We have a very dirty river. It's a Superfund site. And I can't imagine any more industrial development, there. And wherever it happens, climate change, we need green jobs, climate jobs, and we need to be mindful of that. And I fear, 600 more acres of industrial development here, it's not going to make for a livable city either. Thank you.
All right, Laura, thanks for calling. So, Laura, basically, and you guys were passing around the sheet that was about the West Hayden Island development, which, as you know, I know a little bit about that. That Bureau of Planning and the Planning and Sustainability Commission, right?
Yes.
Those people, which include Mike Houck, we already talked about that a little bit. Andre Baugh is the chair of it. They basically, when the Port of Portland wanted to annex West Hayden Island last year, they basically proposed that they were going to build a grain distribution place, which fascinated me. And I actually toured West Hayden Island. Boy, I ripped my blue jeans and the blackberries were delicious. Wow. They got bald eagles over there. But you can't go there. Okay, you can't go there. You can go in a boat or something like that, but you can't. No one has access there. There's even a security guard and stuff. Basically, this same commission, this Bureau of Planning and Sustainability Commission, they put so many restrictions on what the port could do that the port just totally walked away. So I just want to be...
Lisa, the port is back.
Well, the port, yeah, but not necessarily with West Hayden Island.
Yes, West Hayden Island.
This was a terrific... We haven't mentioned it yet, but at the hearing 2 days ago, there was about a third of the testimony was about West Hayden Island, and they thought that they had defeated this. The residents there were happy with what what was set up, but it's back. The port is back trying to grab West Haven.
Well, it is theirs. I mean, they're not grabbing it. It's theirs. It belongs to the port.
I mean, to develop it,
right.
To put industrial land where they thought they weren't going to have that.
Right. So 300 acres of West Haven Island is currently, if you look on the map app, 300 acres is slated to be rezoned as industrial.
Right. So right, I knew that. Right. And I just want to put this out, you know, devil's advocate. One of the things that people are worrying about, and someone that I know who's on the central southeast neighborhood, no, I'm not going to get it right. It's like a central southeast Portland neighborhood association thing here. It's the development? No, it's not. I'm getting that wrong, but it's a group of business owners in central southeast here, right where KBOO is located. They're basically looking at all these gigantic apartment complexes that are getting thrown up. We already talked about that, and asking the rhetorical question, where are these people going to work? What kind of jobs are they going to have? What kind of job do you need if you actually are buying an apartment or buying a house? Right? You can't do that with a coffee shop job. So one of the things that people are looking at, and it should be, and it is part of this, is what about factories? I mean, can someone, the city actually has to plan places to put factories, right?
Well, we have a lot of brownfields and places that we can build more factories.
Sure. Well, it all depends on who owns what, you know, depending on who wants to build something there.
I don't think a lot of people want it on West Haven Island.
Well, I think a lot of people don't even know what West Haven Island is or where it's at or why it matters and stuff like that. So, but I just want to put this out. That pressure is never going to leave. They're going to do something to that island. They absolutely are.
I'm not giving up on it. And there are a lot of trees there too, Lisa.
Oh, it's the thing about West Haven Island is that it is one of the last big chunks of undeveloped land where there's bald eagles and stuff like that. And right across the river, Vancouver's going to build a big petrochemical, what is the word for that?
Terminal.
With the silo, terminal. And I think that the Port of Portland also just floated a plan a few weeks ago to build a liquid fuel terminal somehow. Not there exactly, but somewhere nearby. So it's complicated.
Well, the problem that we're having with these jobs is that through this mixed-use project, they're redefining all the commercial zones, and they're going to add housing as a component. Now, if you add housing to all the commercial zones, what does that do to the job capacity? Are all those jobs going to be Starbucks?
Right.
You know,
right.
Somehow somebody has to do an economic analysis on how these mixed-use zones are being defined.
And that's what really comes down to one of the things that's motivating you three the most is defining these terms of what these zoning things are going to be about.
How does it affect the neighborhood? In our neighborhood, we've asked for an analysis on the capacity, and this plan adds 28% to our small neighborhood. That's a major impact.
And that's just housing, right?
That's just housing.
That's the part that freaks me out. It's like housing in itself is not really, it's not an industry. You understand what I'm saying?
It is an industry.
It is, but it's not. I mean,
I'm afraid it's a big industry.
It's considered that. But again, you know, what part of the problem that we're having all over the country is that there's not enough jobs that pay enough wages to keep people in houses. You know what I mean? It's that Nabisco factory over there in North Portland, potentially, that actually pays someone a wage where they could buy a house or buy an apartment. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's got to be a balance. And I wish, you know, this would make an excellent Sims game. So this is what you need. This is what you got. How do you make it happen? You know what I'm saying?
The other problem is growth isn't paying for growth.
Right.
We're subsidizing all these housing units.
I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody should write that down. Growth is not subsidizing growth. It's not paying for the growth. And I do come back to that issue of where are people going to work? And where is the city planning for the people who, you know, Tazo Tea or whatever, they've got a factory over there in the central southeast neighbor industrial area. Like, I would love to see something more, you know, about where people could create a, what kind of factories should we have? I mean, should they be great big gigantic cannabis grow rooms? I have no idea, but it's not enough even to just say we can't have housing. We have to figure out the business part too. We have to figure that out.
Right.
Anyway.
And I think this comprehensive plan is a chance for us to put
I
mean, living wage jobs is another one of the principal drivers of the plan, but you'll find that it's hardly mentioned. So if there are people out there who want living wage jobs, now's your chance to put it into the comp plan and provide a metric, you know, no growth unless living wage jobs are a certain percentage. People can calculate that and check it and check on it and revise it. So
It's so funny. I remember when I was growing up, my teenage sister had a job at a bookbindery. Can you imagine that? A bookbindery. Never heard of such a thing in the modern age. I'm sure they must exist somewhere. Anyway, we are starting to run out of show. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving, filling in for Joanne Hardesty. We have another caller. We're talking about the comprehensive plan. Let's go for the last caller. We've got Steve on the phone. Steve, what do you think about the development in Portland?
I've got a couple thoughts here for you all. So it's been pretty quicker. And I'm glad you finally mentioned things about jobs related to land development and things like that, because that's what we need here. They've been talking about that we're going to have between 200 to 220,000 more residents here in the next 20 years. They're trying to plan for that. That's where a lot of this comes from. A lot of that won't happen unless we do have jobs, so they go together. Part of the things that I'm kind of concerned about, I understand everybody talking about the epidemic of demolitions and stuff. It's not an epidemic. I believe that that is kind of overblown here. You just had some other caller here talking about she didn't wanted no growth, but then after she got done saying that, she said she loved that Portland has such a variety of homes in her neighborhood, and there's big homes and small homes. So that, to me, sounds kind of delusional almost.
Well, actually, I think what she's saying, she's fighting back against the infill. Go ahead.
I understand. Okay. And so the infill takes place because of our urban growth boundaries, okay? We do not have extra land to put it in there, so that's why they're putting up these multi-apartment units over on Division Street. That is what is being required now to be, that is what is allowed. A lot of us here, and I'm regretful for doing it, have been voting for these same people, have been putting this stuff into place for years. We are now getting the residual effects of that. So I want to support property rights for people. People should have the opportunity to develop their own property how they see fit, as long as it fits in with the code, and it does. So that's why a lot of the pushback is kind of anecdotal and emotional, not based in reality.
But here's the code, and we're building the code now. So
I understand. Yeah. You want to make some changes there. Just make sure
it doesn't go to heck.
I got it. Metro has already done a study. 80% of the current residents here would prefer to have an unattached home to live in. That's not what's available to be built here now because the land is so expensive. In the state of Oregon, only 3% of the state is developed. Okay,
Steve, I got to give you 30 seconds because we're running out of show. Keep going. Do it faster.
We sit around and we fight about this 3% instead of opening up another 0.5% of the state for development. That is what's been wrong here. So. Thank you for my time here, and think about who you're voting for.
I hear you,
what
Steve.
What you voted for.
Right on. And so Bill wants to, I just want to say,
people who want to track this epidemic in demolitions can find the true facts at www.stopthedemolition.org. It's a Portland organization. They're really good.
All right. So, and now I could tell a few stories about that, but that's a different show, I think, even though it's totally linked to this. We need to have final words. Let's start with James. James, what's the most important thing for people to know?
The most important thing to know is that this plan, most of the growth happens in redevelopment, 80 or 90%. Mm-hmm. And if we want to preserve the character of our neighborhoods and the city, we need to put our input in to describe how we want it to grow.
No matter what you think, whether you're Michael or Steve or Laura or Rose, now is the time. Bill, I know you got something to say.
The most important thing for me is to write in and help us get that 90-day extension after everything's defined. That's the most important for Portlanders to consider what the plan is.
I think everyone that called in would probably agree with that, actually. We could have chewed on that a little bit more. What do you think, Carol?
Well, I think it's also time for people to figure out what they value, if they like sun in their backyards, if they like views of the horizon, if they like quiet, peaceful areas, all those
a
kinds of things.
Granny in her house in North Portland, yeah.
Try to get what you like into the plan now.
So think about what you want to see and start there, people. And I want to give out a few phone numbers, by the way, as a little bit of contact information. So we've been talking about the comprehensive plan. You can call the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and give your opinion on the phone. That number, 503-823-7700. The comprehensive plan online, portlandoregon.gov/BPS/comp plan. And you can email comments to psc at portlandoregon.gov. Got to have the comment line, comprehensive plan testimony. You can probably misspell it as long as they know what's going on. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guests, James Peterson, Carol McCarthy, and Bill Keelhorn. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information, again, portlandoregon.gov/BPS/comp plan. Email them, psc@portlandoregon.gov. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Kush, the studio dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of the day. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Teresa Mitchell and Press Watch.
It's an all that dangerous gold. After story had never been.
Well, thanks for getting up with us. It is KBOO Portland, KBOO Radio, your community radio station on a Thursday morning just before 9 o'clock and a busy morning coming up. Coming up in 1 hour, join us for Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints. That's investigative reporter Matthew Lee today and law professor Francis Boyle discussing the war in Syria and the role of the UN. At 11 o'clock on Between the Covers, today they welcome Portland-based poet Kate Gray to discuss her debut novel, Carry the Sky, published by local Forest Avenue Press. And at 11:30, it's The Film Show with Jen Chavez and SW Concert. That's all coming up right after Teresa Mitchell hosting an hour-long Press Watch. It's the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around, that's next on KBOO.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypd.org.